the passing notes, but that teacher knows. Hello everyone, welcome to Yapma Diyorum with my lovely guest this week, Emma.
Hello.
Welcome, Emma.
Thank you, happy to be here.
Great. Today we will mostly talk about you, your work, and the beautiful organization named Istanbul and I.
Excellent.
At first, let me hear about you from your mouth. Who is Emma? What do you do? And how did you end up here in Istanbul?
Sure. So I've actually ended up in Istanbul several different times for different reasons. What brought me here this time was I came actually last year on a Fulbright scholarship, not to Istanbul, but to Izmir. And I was doing research there on host community attitudes towards Syrian refugees. So I was really interested in why is it that different people, different communities, different countries have responded so differently to the refugee crisis. And I was able to stretch that sort of into a two-year stay, and then I moved back to Istanbul, where I've lived previously. I lived here for a year in high school and at various other times, basically whenever the opportunity arises. But since I've been here, the research that I was doing has actually almost taken a backseat to this NGO that I've become increasingly involved in, Istanbul and I, which is how I ended up meeting you. Apart from that, I am from the U.S., as my accent probably betrays. But I've spent almost 3 years in Turkey at various different points and also lived in quite a few other countries or passed through. And here, along with doing the research and work with Istanbul and I also play professional ice hockey with a team in Ankara.
Professional ice hockey in Ankara?
Do I not look like an ice hockey player?
No.
I've been told that before, shockingly enough.
Wouldn't be the first thing that crosses my mind.
No.
That looks like an ice hockey player.
I've been told specifically that is the absolute last thing I would have guessed for you.
Exactly. In Ankara, of all places.
Yes. Yeah. Where else would an American woman go to play ice hockey?
That would have been like,
well, if I was from Canada, I would play ice hockey in Canada, right? Yeah. But by that logic, I should be playing ice hockey in the U.S.
Call it ice hockey. You would call it just hockey.
Well, I do call it just hockey, but then I do that and other people think I'm talking about field hockey, which obviously is not the case. So I've had to learn to specify.
You obviously don't have the hockey type glass. Field hockey. But
thank you.
Obviously, you have the type for ice hockey.
Well, both overwhelmingly white, so I fit that stereotype.
All right. And how did you start doing that? Did you used to do that back in the U.S. or did you start in Ankara?
No. I've been playing hockey technically since I was five, although when I started as a five-year-old, I went to one practice and then left in tears, so I don't know. I don't know if that counts exactly, but I've been playing pretty consistently since I was seven. And when I first started, there was no girls' team, even where I was growing up.
What was the name of your first team?
The Telluride Lizard Heads.
What?
The Lizard Heads.
Lizard Heads.
Which was the name of a landmark, actually, in my hometown. So I'm from rural Colorado, a town called Telluride in the mountains. So it's a town of about 2,000 people. And there's one particular mountain that supposedly used to look like the head of a lizard, but long before I was born, a large chunk of it fell off, and now it just looks like a mountain to me. But it's still called Lizard Head, and for that reason, our local hockey team are called the Lizard Heads.
Great. And after the high school exchange year that you mentioned, what made you come back here to Turkey?
So when I came here in high school, I came when I was... Actually, I'd come even before that as a child with my family, which was part of why I chose to come to Turkey for high school. But I came here when I was 15. I studied here for a year of high school. I lived with Turkish host families. And I put a lot of work into studying Turkish, which every Turkish person I encountered found an absolutely bizarre decision.
Exactly. today was the first time I even found out about this, and I was absolutely shocked.
People generally are, so it's almost worth it for the shock in and of itself. But it's also turned out to have been a really useful investment, which is what I was hoping it would be. So essentially, since then, I keep finding good opportunities to come back here. So I've come to visit my host families and then also came here to Boisici for a summer when I was in college to study Turkish. I got a grant from the U.S. government because they also don't think it's useless, fortunately for me. And then after I graduated, again, came back here on the Fulbright grant. I'm supposed to be leaving in fall, and somehow I think I'm going to find the opportunity to be back here again.
And your study was based on the refugee relations, right?
Yeah, it was. So I was working in the refugee sector, but specifically I was actually looking at local communities, at specifically youth in Izmir. And what interests me is, why is it that throughout the entire refugee crisis, you know, in Western media outlets, they'll call that the refugee crisis of 2015 or 2016 in Turkey. We'll know that it stretches much, much longer than that. But why is it that some countries have reacted so differently than others? And why is it that some individuals have reacted so differently? Why do some people volunteer their time, their money, their energy trying to help resettle newcomers in their community? And why do other people spend their energy advocating for walls to keep those people out? And I'm interested in research that can be applied. So what is it about policies? What is it about malleable factors in our environment that creates those differences? And how can we learn to resettle people more effectively without creating more friction in host communities? Because the big picture for me is, with climate change, there are going to be an increasing number of people displaced. And the better we learn how to resettle those people without throwing the communities that take them in into chaos, without endangering the democratic institutions that we all rely on, the more effectively we're going to be able to adapt.
All right. Makes sense. Yeah. And did you choose specifically because of your experience in Turkey, or was it the first thing that you chose, then you chose Turkey as a field of study?
It all just came together quite well for me. So in university, I majored in psychology, and I also had two minors in race and ethnicity studies and in Turkish language. And then it just so happened that over the summers of 2015 and 2016, the issue of displacement in this region began gaining more and more attention. And it happened that Turkey, which is this place that I'd already come to love and come to see as a home of a sort, is hosting more refugees than anywhere else in the world.
And this is not the first time, by the way. I mean, we have been welcoming Syrians for the last 7.5 years. But
exactly.
In the 90s, we were welcoming people from Turkic countries, mm-hmm. from the Central Asia. In the 80s, Bulgarian people. Mm-hmm. In the 1920s, people from the Western Thrace. 500 years before that, we were welcoming people, Jewish people from the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah.
This is pretty much the story of Turkey in general. New people come in, mm-hmm. and join, and basically settle in.
Yeah, immigration is not new to Turkey, and Turkey's not only been a destination country, it's also been a transit country, and it's also been a source country. So there's also a lot of people who have moved from Turkey to other countries. So it's a place that's very much involved in migration and has been for a long time. But it's also a place that has a really strong national identity, and that sometimes comes into conflict with this idea of people coming and settling from other places. So that national identity persists actually in spite of the trends of migration that you've been mentioning.
I see. And so far, were you satisfied with your research here?
To be honest, no, because I still need to finish it. And this has been a long ongoing project for me. And as I mentioned, since I came to Istanbul, what I've gotten really involved in is work on the ground, so work with this NGO, and as a result, a lot of my research, I have all my data, but doing the analysis and the writing has unfortunately taken a backseat, and that is something that I very much want to wrap up, but I still need to do to be able to have clear takeaways from that.
I see. And let's talk about this NGO, right?
Let's do that.
Istanbul and I.
Yeah.
It's been 4 years, if I recall correctly, since it was founded, right? 3 years?
Yeah, 3 years, I think, since it was more formalized.
And tell me about the I mean, I've obviously been a friend of Istanbul, right?
Indeed.
But do me like a pitch, right? What is Istanbul and I, and what does it do?
So Istanbul and I is a youth volunteer organization, and we create a community of mostly young people from all around the world. So that includes locals, it includes foreigners of all stripes, so displaced people, also other migrants, who come together in the spirit of volunteerism. And we carry out a lot of different projects around the city that's aiming to meet the needs of displaced and disadvantaged communities in Istanbul. So that ranges from teaching Turkish to Syrian children who are being integrated into the Turkish education system, to helping to run a free restaurant that serves food to homeless and communities in need. But we also have this sort of social inclusion side, and I actually work primarily on that, where we host a lot of events in our office in Karaköy and also around the city that bring people together, whether it's for talks or for workshops or culture nights or language clubs. So those are things that give people an opportunity to gain skills, oftentimes through our workshops or our language clubs, in a way that's very accessible because we don't charge for any of our events. It's all donation-based. But it also, what I think is really special, is it brings together these really different groups of people that might otherwise never be in the same space together. So it's, more than anything else, I think a really special community. And I've been a part of a lot of really great communities, a lot of really diverse communities, but I've never been in a community like this.
Great. I think it's pretty much the largest English-speaking community operating in Istanbul.
I don't know if that's the case. Certainly there's Yabancı and some other groups that are explicitly aimed to be English-speaking organizations. But in terms of English-speaking social impact organizations, that's probably true.
Right, yeah. And there's a huge number of people involved in it that are not just Turkish, but rather expats are working on this.
Yeah.
In fact, an expat founded this, right?
Yeah, so we have volunteers now from over 60, 65 different countries.
Wow,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's nice. Really incredibly diverse. And it was founded by Tamer, as you mentioned, who is Iranian-American himself. And it actually was originally primarily foreigners, and they had difficulty getting a lot of Turkish participation. Since I've joined, that's not been the case. We have a really strong Turkish community as well. And it's really a multilingual community, I would say. And English just happens to be the most common global language, so it's our default, but it's not explicitly an English language community.
Yeah, all right. What else? Now, you have mentioned that you are into reggaeton, indie music, and hip-hop. Just want to clarify,
among others,
because
yes.
Normally that wouldn't be the case. I mean, at least in my show with my guests.
I suppose.
And I'm quite happy by that. So, let's hear a little song by this not so famous dude named Notorious B.I.G.
I think I've heard of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine. Right? I mean, not in terms of health, but he used to be fine. So let's hear Going Back to Cali by Notorious B.I.G.
Let's
right?
do it. Yeah. With you or against you, form adventure, back through that maze I sent you, talking to the rap inventor, the game type fifth that flame right, spell my name right, B-I-double-G-I-E, iced out, lights out, me and C the Leo, getting for some chick he know, see it's all about the cheddar. All right,
now, where were we? Because we just stopped talking like 2 minutes ago, right?
Notorious B.I.G.
Exactly, just ended. Now, I would like to ask about the future of Istanbul and I. What are your plans, or what is the institution's plans in the future about both your current work, where will it lead to, and I want to know if there are any new projects coming up.
Yeah, there's always a lot of changes happening. That's both a challenge, and what's exciting about Istanbul and I is that both the collection of people is always changing because we have so many foreigners, so many students, so many people who are here temporarily. It's always a rotational group, and there's always new people coming to the community. And one result of that is that the organization itself is always changing, and the things that we're doing are always changing. So I don't know exactly what will happen in the future, but for the short term, we have two new projects starting. One is with an organization that works with LGBT refugees primarily, and we're going to be expanding some of our language workshops and also other skills building workshops to that community. And in addition, we're starting a second round of a project that we do in collaboration with Small Projects Istanbul, which is another organization that does a lot of work with the Syrian community in Turkey, Syrian and other displaced communities. And we're following up on a workshop series we had with a group of teenage boys in the winter. And we're going to do a lot of similar things with a group of girls now. So those are projects on things of interest to them, but seeking to build leadership skills and also career skills, and whatever it is that they're interested in learning, because we have a community of professionals that can deliver a lot of those skill sets.
Great. And one thing that just fascinates me about your work is that it is not just helping people out socially, but rather you also gain them skills. Mm-hmm. And you meet them, you basically hold meetups with executives from the ecosystem, from industries that would help them out in order to have like a social inclusion, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not just for social causes, but rather something that can help people out in their later lives after their students when they're in the field, basically. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I have always been fascinated about is that Istanbul, and I, at least I've seen it, is open for everyone. I mean, in the rest of the Turkey, I cannot quite say that conservative people are that open to be at least in the same environment with LGBT people, for example. Yeah. But I've seen that all colors have been primarily featured, and people are just happy being in the same environment with people that their social groups don't normally really hang out with, right? How did this environment start? How did you make it happen? This is Istanbul, and I is the only example I've seen so far that can do this.
That's also part of what drew me to the organization that I found so notable. I can't actually take any credit for that, because I only joined about 8 months ago, and I think it really had that dynamic when I joined. So I have to credit that to Tamor and Sarah and all of the volunteers that put so much work into building the organization, because that is, it's really unique that it has this, that's what I mean by sort of a true diversity, in that it's not people who are nominally representing different social groups, but it's people who are oftentimes in tension with one another in other areas of society. And yet, what Istanbul and I presents is a set of common goals. It brings people together to do something else. It brings people together to volunteer. And then, just coincidentally, they're then brought into contact with a very different group of people than they probably would be spending time with otherwise. So I'm generally skeptical of initiatives that are explicitly for the purpose of social integration. I think that can lead to sort of an awkward setting where you have these groups of people. What I'm most familiar with is it would be, say, Turkish and Syrian young people, perhaps, who are brought into a room together, and that's supposed to create social integration somehow, and you have those two people, those two groups standing on opposite sides of the room and saying nothing to each other because it's artificial, it's forced. What I think is much more effective at actually bringing people together is when they come together for something else entirely. And the coming into contact with other people is just coincidental because you're working together on something else, whether it's a sports team or whether it's a volunteer project.
Nice. Neat. Really, I really like your work in general.
Well, we appreciate all of your support.
So, other than Istanbul and I, right? You have mentioned that you'll be leaving Turkey in fall.
I will be.
And what are your future plans, basically? What do you want to, how do you want to proceed with your career?
So in the fall, I'll be starting a master's in the UK, studying refugee and forced migration studies at Oxford, which is a one-year program, and then I'm set up to continue to a PhD in sociology and social policy. So that's the clearest potential path right now, is going into the realm of academia, and what I'm really interested in is research on intergroup relations, and specifically, as I've mentioned before, how policy can shape those relationships. Because coming from a background in psychology, I think that the way that different groups interact, whether those are racial groups, which is something that I was focused on in the US, or whether they're post-community versus refugee groups, which is the dynamic I focus on here, or whatever the relevant divide is, I think psychologically it works in a similar way. And I think the way that those divides are broken down, the way those inequalities are decreased, also operate in a similar way. And so I'm interested in the many realms in which that plays out and how those dynamics hopefully can be addressed.
All right. Nice. I think you're, well, so far, the most, how can I say, intellectually sophisticated guest of mine. So I'm kind of fascinated because this is not how it normally goes.
We can talk about hockey fights instead. Is that better?
Okay. Now, I was just absolutely surprised by your Turkish level.
So, throws people off.
Yeah. Could you explain how exactly did you manage to speak it so fluently? Because normally, the expats who learn Turkish in their later years, you can always tell it. You can always tell that, oh, this is a person who have learned it later in their life because of the punctuation. But that's not the case with you, right?
Thank you.
So would you like to explain in Turkish, how exactly did you manage to learn it so well?
Tamam o zaman. İlk önce şöyle söyleyeyim. Ben gerçekten öğrenmeyi çok isterdim. O yüzden çok çaba harcadım ona. Yani ilk lisede geldiğimde zaten Türk bir ailesinin yanında kalıyordum. Hem de yerel bir liseye gidiyordum. O yüzden de çevrem tamamen Türkçe olmuş. Bir de öğrenmek çok istediğim için okuldan sonra derslere gidiyordum ve her zaman Türkçe konuşmaya uğraşıyordum. Yani arkadaşlarım benimle İngilizce konuşsa bile ben Türkçe cevap verirdim. Öyle çok garip konuşmalarımız oldu. Ve yani ben gerçekten hiç Türkçe bilmeyince bile yine de konuşmaya çalışıyordum ve saçma sapan şeyler derdim her zaman, ondan eminim. Ama hiç utanmıyordum. Çünkü öğrenmek o kadar çok isterdim. Ve ondan sonra üniversiteye geldiğimde derslerle devam ettim ama Amerika'da Türkçe dersler pek yani az sayılır. Evet, hiç de yaygın değil. Ve aslında Stanford'da vardı, ben Stanford'da okudum. Ve Stanford'ın Türkçesi programı vardı ama sadece belli bir süreye kadar. O yüzden bir sene dersi girdim. Ondan sonra Türkçe'ye dönmek için burs kazandım. Dediğim gibi Boğaziçi'nde bir kursa girdim. Onu da o zaman da okudum. Ama gerçekten yani beni en çok, nasıl diyeyim, fayda sağlayan şey, hiç utanmadan her zaman konuşmaya çalıştım ve şimdi bile çok fazla hata yapıyorum, onu biliyorum. Ama yine de konuşuyorum ve artık Türkçem kötüleşmiş galiba. Çünkü dediğim gibi İstanbul'un aynı çevresi en çok İngilizce konuşuyor, çok fazla yabancılarımız olduğu için. O yüzden artık çok fazla Türkçe konuşmuyorum açıkçası. Ama yine de Türkiye'deyim, yine de her zaman duyabiliyorum, o da güzel geliyor.
Çok güzel. Back to English.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time for doing this. I was really, I don't know if it's the correct term, but flabbergasted or something.
Great word.
Right? Is that even a real word, by the way?
It is a real word.
I just heard it somewhere. And made me quite happy. So thank you so much for taking time. And I really, really, really wish the best for your, at least in the near future, for your academic career. And I think that much, much great work will be published and developed and researched.
Inshallah.
Inshallah, indeed. Well, that was it for Yapma Diyorum this week. And thanks to Emma.
Thank you for having me.
And see you around. Bye-bye.